I recently saw a speech of Barack Obama, and someone asked him a question about Palestine, and he gave the same exact talking points that we've heard over and over again. He wouldn't even refer to Palestine as Palestine, you know, occupied territory, or the same stuff we've heard. And I was wondering if you foresee anything different happening at any point.
Well, that's why I left the Democratic Party, because I think it's very clear that what the special interests are that control both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. We have two parties. They are the War Party and the Money Party. And that's basically it. They are one and the same. So if we want something different in terms of policy, we've got to do something different. And that's why I declared my independence, just as women approximately 150 years ago declared their independence from the national order of the day that denied women the right to vote. That was done. It was historic. And after decades of struggle, women got the right to vote. So hopefully it won't take decades of struggle, but we ought to be able to defeat the war machine that steals from the people's needs and provides for war and death and destruction all over our planet.
Hi, Representative McKinney. Thank you for speaking. You're an inspiration to everybody that fights common narratives. Thank you. My question is that as an advocate for nonviolence and peace, you agree more with the practices and policies of either the Palestinian Authority or Hamas?
I don't think that the Palestinian Authority actually represents the will of the Palestinian people because they did not win the election. And so, therefore, Hamas represents the will of the Palestinian people and should be reflected as the policymakers. They shouldn't be in prison.
Thank you for speaking, Representative McKinney. I have a question to ask as somebody who considers himself emphatically anti-occupation. And my question is, basically, what made the African American civil rights movement so easy to support was that Martin Luther King was such an unambiguously good guy. He supported human rights everywhere. He supported peace. He didn't have a hateful bone in his body. And it seems to me that there's a difference when it comes to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, because certainly the Israeli occupation is brutal, it's cruel, but at the same time, Hamas is a rank, anti-Semitic, vile organization. And although it may be the anti-Jewish organization, and although it may be the elected party of the Palestinian people, I don't believe that. I believe that there are some things. My question is, where is the Palestinian Martin Luther King?
I think Palestine has many Martin Luther King equivalents. I would ask the question, where is the Israeli Martin Luther King? What Israel has done to the Palestinians is genocide.
Thank you for your presentation, and I've followed your work when you were in Congress and since you've been out of Congress. You said that when you were in Congress shortly after Katrina, that orders came from the Democratic Party to prevent black congressmen from participating in a panel to investigate what happened in Katrina.
Especially black members of Congress, but all Democrats, yes.
I'm particularly interested in the African-American candidates. Could you identify those individuals?
I think it's very clear. The hearing that we sponsored, that I requested, was a hearing on the role of race and class in shaping the government's response to Hurricanes Katrina and Rita. And at that hearing, we had the actual people from the Gulf states, particularly New Orleans, come and testify as to their experiences. And that was one of the most viewed hearings at the time that was broadcast by C-SPAN. It was broadcast several times by C-SPAN. And I'm sure it's in the C-SPAN archives. All you have to do is go and you can look and see who participated. And then you will know who did not.
So at this time, you're not going to identify them?
Well, I think it's fair. I mean, you know, I was there. Huh? Let me ask this question. Are there any Katrina or Rita survivors that managed to get to Chicago? You have Katrina survivors here. Okay. So you didn't really have to be directly affected by the floodwaters in order to have an interest, aside from the fact that there's a humanitarian interest. This is something, a catastrophe, that happened to a major U.S. city, and individuals in that city were grossly mistreated. So every member of Congress should have been interested anyway, but only a few showed up. Me. Bill Jefferson from New Orleans and Jean Green from Mississippi and one other member of Congress, basically. There was no one from Chicago, no one from Illinois, no one else from Georgia, no one from North Carolina, no one from South Carolina, no one from Florida. I mean, you know. Yes, sir.
Ma'am, we are very grateful for your enlightening speech. The savagery and barbarity of Nazi Germany is very well recorded. And something like that we saw in the civil rights movement also.
Yes.
And after South Africa became free, assuming that Israel is the only European colony in Asia and Africa, do you fear that worse barbarity and savagery will continue and will actually increase on Palestinian people by the Israelis and end the allies of Israel?
I see no relenting. And in fact, if we look at Benjamin Netanyahu, talking about the existential threat to Israel that is posed by Iran and the acquiescence to that line by our own president and the signing recently of an additional $30 billion in aid over a 10-year period to Israel, it is clear that the death and destruction are going to continue. And they're going to continue as long as Americans say that this is all right, that as long as we continue to vote in policymakers who represent this particular point of view.
Good evening. My name is Magda. And God, I'm so, I had so much to say. I'm so nervous. First of all, I voted for you.
Well, thank you for that.
And I'm proud that I did that. But here is a question. What are you doing March 18th, you know, March 18th for the 7th annual year of the not commemoration of that war that we're still involved in? And would you accept to speak at this rally if you are here in Chicago? We certainly would love to hear what you have to say. We're in the midst of planning it. I even took a chance on doing this because I'm not the only one in that coalition. But sincerely speaking, what are you doing March 18th at approximately 5 in the in the evening? And I'm inviting all of you to join us to say out now, and you know, U.S. out of Afghanistan, and we want this to go. And so anyway, what would you say to an invitation? Sorry, well, I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
Oh, that's not on the spot at all. That's easy. On March 18th, actually, I'm supposed to be headed to Detroit, but I think Detroit is not too far from Chicago. So theoretically, it would be possible for me to do March 18th, Chicago, March 19th, Detroit, March 20th, Washington, D.C.,
hey,
in front of the White
good.
House.
Good. Great. All right. So can we contact you at some point, right?
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Congresswoman. Thank you for speaking. I had two quick questions. I'd like to know, your opinion, or do you think it's an actual step forward, the fact that 54 congressmen signed a resolution about the siege? And my other question was, what are your thoughts on J Street? Do you think that they are, do you think that they're legitimate, or what do you think in terms of dealing with them as another Israeli lobby? Thank you.
The 54 members of Congress who signed the letter long overdue, and it's certainly a step forward. I think it was, I can't remember now if it was Brian Baird and Keith Ellison who started the letter. And to get 54 to sign on is something that is probably unprecedented in the time that I have been looking at the issues of Israel and Palestine. However, signing a letter and casting a vote are, while signing the letter is important, there should not be any more votes to send money and war material to Israel. I mean, that's when we really will make a difference if our policymakers refuse to send any more money to the war machine, ours as well as the Israeli one.
And J Street?
J Street, I just read something that J Street had reconciled with some of the AIPAC people. So, anything that is an organization that supports or purports to support human rights for everyone, I would be interested in pursuing a little bit more information on them.
I would like to draw people's attention to April 18th here at the University of Chicago at Ida Noyes Hall. The American Friends Service Committee is also holding hearings into Israel-Palestine. So make a note of that and attend. And I'm reminded of that because Congresswoman McKinney, you talked about being invited to the Russell Tribunal in Barcelona,
yes,
which is wonderful. And I know that Desmond Travers, one of the members of the Independent Investigating Committee that wrote the Goldstone Report, will also be testifying. Mm. I have two questions for you. One is that the international boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement was tremendously important to ending apartheid in South Africa, and Palestinian civil society has called for a similar boycott. Back in the day, the Congressional Black Caucus was key in bringing the issue of South Africa before the American public and before the U.S. government. In your experience in Congress, what was the awareness, what was the level of concern, of willingness to support a similar movement on behalf of Palestinians? And how do you see that going forward? The second question is, can you explain to us the fact that the Obama administration, Great Britain, and other countries are preparing to negotiate with and give funds to the Taliban in Afghanistan, but they're still not willing to talk to the elected representatives of Palestinians, even when they have engaged in ceasefires, accepted the two-state solution, and submitted to various other conditions dictated by the United States. I'm puzzled by that discrepancy. Thank you.
BDS without a domestic mobilization is not going to be successful. So we have to have the domestic mobilization. And you're absolutely right that the Congressional Black Caucus was instrumental in making bringing this issue to Washington, D.C., to all of the policymakers. Well, we have a little difference here because we have the pro-Israel lobby, and the last thing they're interested in is seeing a successful BDS. So that means then that the people have to redouble their efforts in terms of lobbying, but I don't think lobbying is enough. I think we gotta stop voting for people who don't represent our interests. And so if we need peace candidates. That's what we need, people who they may be good on one issue or halfway good on another issue, but they're, you know, bad on the peace issue. We need some single issue voters. And the single issue needs to be peace, peace with justice. You can't get justice, you know, true peace unless you have justice. And I recall a paper that was written after Hurricane Katrina, and it was calling for 1 million blacks to leave the Democratic Party, to register as, in California, you can register decline to state what your political party is. And so they were saying, this author was saying, register as decline to state. I don't know what it is here. You register as independent or how it's done here. But that's what we need. We need people who will say we've had it with the Democrats, we've had it with the Republicans. That's what the teabaggers are trying to say. And we want a different way. The fact that you only had out of 535 members of Congress, you only had five who voted against the Operation Cast Lead resolution. And so that means that we really only have five who are immune to this, the pressures of special interests, the pro-Israel lobby. It's interesting that NATO would be interested in giving $500 million to the Taliban so the Taliban can forget that they are the owners of a country. Or the citizens or residents of a country, and so they sell their country for $500 million. It's a ridiculous proposal as far as I'm concerned. And why is it that U.S. policymakers won't talk to Hamas? Because they're being dictated to not to do so. That's the answer, and nobody wants to end up like me, out of Congress.
Hi, Cynthia.
Hi.
I hope you remember me.
Yes, of course.
Okay. First of all,
Palestina, USA.
Thank you. First of all, thank you for tying the Palestinian struggle with the African-American struggle. It's very well needed. And so my question is, when are you going to tie it with the immigrant and the Latino struggle? You know, immigrants have been used in the USA and under this times to cover up the economic crisis. And the same wall that they're building in Palestine, they're building it around Mexico. So I think it will be very important and very needed to also bring the Latino people into the Palestinian struggle. It's happening in Honduras. That's my first question. And the second one is that you kind of answered already, where do we go from here? I think it's very important to give a lot of the people that are participating here, mostly the youth, you know, something to do about Palestine. And I just wanted to reinforce the invitation to the March, 18 March.
Ah, okay. I think it's very important to tie in all of the struggles. What the, in particular, in my state of Georgia, even though technically I'm a resident of California, there is a war going on against the immigrant community. And if one just happens to be a Latino and driving a car, then you could be deported for driving. I mean, it's just absolutely phenomenal after the United States economic policy has been to crush these countries. And of course, now with what we're seeing in Haiti, with the imposition of 20,000 U.S. troops in Haiti, of course, we know historically Haiti was the jump-off point for the liberation of Latin America from the Spanish colonial yoke. And now we can see, remember, Zbigniew Brzezinski is the mentor of our president, and so he believes in rollback. And we can see Haiti now being the point that will initiate rollback of the people's gains in Venezuela and Cuba and Nicaragua, Paraguay, Uruguay. And all of this is so that the United States not only can just have suzerainty over the peoples of Latin America, but also so the United States can steal their resources. And I just happened to be in Mexico at a time when the United States, the Mexican people were demanding that they were not going to have their oil company privatized, and they were not going to have their electricity grid sold off to U.S. corporations, and they were not going to see their schools privatized. And so the people who are caught in between all of this are the ones who are forced to come here and leave their families, leave their communities, leave their homes just in order to make ends meet. And they shouldn't be treated the way they are being treated now. So yes, it is definitely a part of the story of oppression and also of resistance that we all join together. Yes.
My question is, have you ever run in conflict with Christian Zionists?
Have I ever run in conflict with Christian Zionists?
There are Zionists that are not Jewish but are Christian that take an interpretation of the chosen, the Old Testament.
Hagee or whatever, unfortunately I haven't, I don't know, unfortunately or fortunately, I haven't come into close contact with them. I guess, does Pat Robertson qualify as well as one? And, you know, he's about as heinous as they come.
Hey, I was just wondering if you could expand on the details of your trip in Gaza. What kind of boat were you on? What were you delivering, and why were you attacked?
Oh, well, there were three attempts to get into Gaza. One was successful, and that was the land convoy with George Galloway. We had medical supplies. Those medical supplies were not let in. We were allowed to get in for 24 hours. The first attempt was the 15-hour boat trip that was rammed by the Israelis. We were rescued by the Lebanese, and that was harrowing because I don't know how to swim. And then learned after the fact that I had my life jacket on backwards, or, you know? So that was pretty bad. The second time was a Spirit of Humanity ferry, which is a very, very slow boat, and that was a 30-hour trip, but it was intercepted by the Israelis, and that's when we were put in prison. When the boat was rammed by the Israelis and we thought we were going to die, the English physician who was next to me announced to all of us that we should prepare ourselves mentally to die. And so that's what I began to do, and I started thinking about, you know, how people would view me as a divorced mother of one son who was out doing this kind of thing and lost my life. And I was afraid of the water. I was afraid of getting crushed in between our boat and the Israeli warship. I was afraid of a lot of things, and then I wasn't afraid anymore. It was sort of like that moment when you realize that it is what it is, and this is going to be your fate. It's sort of like how I imagine Malcolm X felt when he received the phone call on the morning of his appointment at the Audubon Ballroom. He received a phone call saying, "Today is the day." And he could have told his wife to get the kids ready. We're going to leave the country, or we're going to go back to Georgia. But he didn't do that. He told his wife, you know, get the kids ready, and, you know, I'm keeping my appointment. He kept his appointment, and he was murdered. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the last 5 years of his life, United States government didn't make a secret of the fact that they wanted him dead, and he had 260 military intelligence officers tracking him for the last 3 months of his life. Can you imagine 260 people following you? You know that time is short, and I believe that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. knew that time was short when he said on the night of April 3rd, 1968, "I'm not fearing any man." That's what he said, "I'm not fearing any man." So he had, I believe, his state of mind was that he had accepted the fate that had been dished out to him because of his convictions, because he dared to stand up for his convictions. And so at that particular moment, in the middle of the Mediterranean Sea, when our boat was taking on water and the prognosis was dim because we didn't know who was going to agree to rescue us, I also accepted my fate. And then immediately I lost all of my fear, and I was ready to die, and to die an honorable death doing something that I believed in.
I have two questions. One, are you or someone else that was in your party in a process of writing about this experience, since we've got censored reports from CNN and others? My other question is, since it's your belief and other people on this vessel that this was a crime in international waters,
yes,
has anyone discussed the process of charging the government of Israel with this crime, taking it to the world court?
Actually, that's something that has been discussed by the Free Gaza, the attorneys who are working with Free Gaza. It's clearly both instances are criminal acts on the part of the Israeli government. But the likelihood of getting justice is very small. In fact, I was involved in supporting the lawsuit that was filed in the Spanish courts because I have advocated going to the Spanish courts because of their respect for the laws of universal jurisdiction. And unfortunately, we filed a lawsuit naming Herbert Walker Bush, Clinton, George W. Bush, and Obama as war criminals for their policies in Iraq. And the Spanish government changed their law and just a couple of days ago rejected the lawsuit. So the idea of getting justice is very difficult when it comes to pressing on Israeli criminal behavior. Doesn't mean we won't try, but it's difficult. Okay, well, thank you. Yes? The civil rights is what? Passé?
But I mean that's a whole other story, but it's amazing.
I have a copy that I can give to you. It's I don't think it's available on the internet yet. But if I can say something just rather very quickly about the quality of the young people who are my posse in Oakland. I understand now why the Black Panther Party started over in Oakland. Those young people, I said, well, I'm from the South, you know, it should have started in the South. That was, you know, sort of the focus, but no, the spirit of resistance is there in Oakland with those young people, and they travel up and down. They have no money, but they have organization, and they have a sense of history because they understand the counterintelligence program. They understand what this government is capable of doing to them now. And so they travel up and down between Los Angeles. The trial of the police officer has been moved to Los Angeles, but they travel up and down between Oakland and Los Angeles, and the reason that there's a trial is because these young people wouldn't give up. They have the spirit of resistance. That same resistance that was clear when young people in the civil rights movement faced dogs and water hoses and lynch mobs just to get an education. Those young people in Oakland have that very same spirit of resistance that we see with the young people in Palestine who throw the rocks. And that's why I call it our intifada. We had an intifada and we have a simmering intifada in this country. If these issues of injustice are not addressed, you are going to see this country erupt. I just did a conference in Munich where I talked about this country coming apart at the seams. And it's coming apart at the seams because the issues of the people are not being addressed. And anytime a president can present a budget for over $700 billion to the Pentagon, which is the most that has ever been given to the Pentagon in a single year, I don't know why we don't have more resistance on the streets. Now, I know that could make me an enemy combatant in this country. But we need resistance to these policies and the intrusions of the government into our very lives. So anyway, you know, that's what a university is for, free speech, right? And freedom of thought and critical analysis. And anyone who analyzes the situation of our country today knows that this is not what the greatest generation sacrificed their lives for. This is not what Malcolm and Martin sacrificed their lives for. This is not what my parents sacrificed their time and they did the marching and all of that. This is not what they sacrificed for. And the idea that people have that a Democratic war crime is more acceptable than a Republican war crime is repugnant to me, and I hope it doesn't exist on this campus. Thank you very much.